Former Kansas City Police Department intelligence detective and now attorney Gary Jenkins produced four documentary films, most recently Gangland Wire. Creator of smartphone app entitled Kansas City Mob Tours. Download it now. If you like what you hear, go to ganglandwire.com. Navigate to the shop page. We need you to put a hit out on our donate button. Gangland Wire True Crime Stories is produced at the Big Dumb Fun Show Studio 4. And now, here's Gary Jenkins.
Welcome back, everybody, to the third and I think final episode of our story about Albert Anastasia. Good to be here in the studios of the Big Dumb Fun Show, Studio 4 in the beautiful Ice House building, Midtown Kansas City. Say hello, Aaron.
Hello, Aaron.
Hey, Aaron. Aaron, guess what?
What?
I went up 2 mile an hour more this week. I got 130.
130?
130 is all-time record for me. How about you? Any of you guys out there ever had a motorcycle? 130 or up? There probably is. There probably is. Email me or message me in some manner. Go to Gangland Wire Facebook page and let me know if you've ever gone 130 mile an hour or more on a motorcycle on two wheels. That doesn't count in a car.
You don't even know the top end of this.
No, I don't. Bike. I'm going to find it, Aaron. I'm going to find it. I'm so glad that I got my good friend Dan Matt, retired wheelman, as we call him. Wheelman's a motorcycle officer, retired wheelman who puts the best parts on. He's always used K&N high-performance, high-quality oil filters. And you know, I'm getting it pretty hot, and that oil gets hot. I need to keep that oil clean. And he told me he's going to be putting a K&N air filter in it.
As well as an oil filter?
Right. They make both. They make filters for everything. You know, they actually, K&N sells over 5,000 products, design high-performance cars, trucks, motorcycles, engines, and other industrial applications.
I read here online, they're also the original performance filter of NASCAR.
Oh, cool. I didn't realize that. Yeah. Well, Dan knows what he's doing. He suggested the right parts. I noticed those air filters are I could get one cheaper, but... You know, I want the best for my car, my motorcycle. Like, I buy the most expensive tires, Aaron. Can you imagine that?
On a motorcycle? At least you only have to buy two.
Yeah, when you're doing 130 mile an hour, you don't want the chintzy-ass tires, I'll tell you that.
No.
And to bring you back up, we've got Albert Anastasia has come over from Southern Italy with his brothers in early 1900s, got involved in criminal activities and become the head of a outfit, became known as Murder Incorporated. Actually, the real name among themselves was the Brownsville Boys. They were taking care of all the mafia's hit jobs in the 1930s and 40s. Albert Anastasia has killed his own boss and his boss's brother, the Magano brothers. He has now, with Frank Costello's help, been promoted to be the boss of the old Mangano family. He's supported by Joseph Bonanno of the Bonanno family. So we're at 1952. That is kind of an interesting little sidelight here, Aaron. I'm not sure this is true or not. I'll tell you how they learned about this. But there was a famous bank robber in the early 1950s named Willie Sutton. He is the guy, have you ever heard the saying, they asked this bank robber, said, well, why do you rob banks? And he said, well, that's because that's where the money is. Well, that was Willie Sutton. He was supposedly the master of disguise and was real well-known bank robber. And there was they were unable to connect him to any bank robberies, and there was a man named Arnold Schuster. He was a young New Yorker who successfully identified Willie Sutton as a bank robber of a particular bank and resulted in his arrest. Now, the story is that when Anastasia saw Arnold Schuster being interviewed on TV, by then we're 1950s and we have TV, he allegedly said, Anastasia allegedly said, I can't stand squealers. Let's hit that guy. And lo and behold, March 8th, just a few days later, 1952, a gunman shot Arnold Schuster in the head on a street in Borough Park, Brooklyn. Now, nobody really connected that up with Anastasia until 1963, and there was this famous, the first mob guy that ever came in and talked frankly and truthfully and in depth about the mafia was Joseph Valachi. Have you ever read the book, The Valachi Papers? And his claim was that Albert Anastasia had made this statement that he hated squealers and to hit that guy, and then sent somebody out to hit Arnold Schuster just because he was doing the right thing and identified a bank robber.
Just because he probably identified him because he was at a bank when the robbery occurred.
Right, right.
And
exactly.
He was somebody who came forward to say, yeah, that's Willie Sutton, the bank robber.
Now, nobody was ever arrested for this Schuster murder, and that's the only clue they ever have. So many people in law enforcement are a little bit skeptical of this. But it makes a good story anyhow.
Well, but when Joseph Valachi comes forward, he has a lot of information.
He does.
A lot of stories, you know, that people did believe.
Right. He came forward because he thought that there was a hit out on him. He was in federal penitentiary down in Atlanta, and he thought that somebody up in New York had put a hit out on him. And so he said, okay, I'll show you guys. And he came in, and he told everything. He told it all. We ought to do a... There's a famous book, The Valachi Papers. I've read it. It's been a long time. Ought to get that and make notes out of that and
do an episode.
We could do two or three. We probably, but I just pick out the best thing. You could do, you know, you could do episodes for 6 months on what Valachi said, but that would be kind of interesting, kind of where he came from. And I can't remember who it was. I think he was a Genovese family member, but I'm not sure. But anyhow, we're at 1952. Federal government, now Anastasia has the boss of his own crime family. So as I said, once you get up high enough, not only other jealous mobsters may be gunning for you, but the government's after you too. They filed a suit to take away his citizenship. They claim he lied on his citizenship application. Of course, they gave him his citizenship because kind of as a reward for things he did during the war. So who knows where the real story is in that. But they have moved on him. He's probably pissed them off one too many times.
Well, they had the power to give him citizenship. They then had the power to take it away.
Right. The Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away. I said that on the golf course.
But from 42 to 52 in 10 years, you know, he moves up the ladder.
He is up there. He is now a boss of one of the five families. He has his own, the Anastasio family. There's other things going on at the time. I mentioned this before, that Vito Genovese, who I think I mistakenly said was going to move in and take over this Mangamo family. Anastasia ended up with it. Genovese has moved up. He has his own family. He wants to take over Lucky Luciano's operation because Lucky Luciano, and then by proxy in a way, he had handed over the reins of his power to Frank Costello to be the boss of bosses in New York City. Genovese wants to be the boss of bosses, but he needs to kill Frank Costello. Frank Costello is the kind of a guy that doesn't have a lot of enemies and has always tried to work things out so everybody can continue to make money. And Genovese can't kill Costello without killing Anastasia.
Is that because if he kills Costello, that maybe the supposition is Anastasia moves up to be the boss of bosses?
That, and he will move on Genovese. He owes his loyalty to Frank Costello and Lucky Luciano because they're the guys that work together. And Genovese was part of this group, too. They all work together to form this National Crime Syndicate. These are the original organized crime members that really modernized organized crime to what we became known today is the La Cosa Nostra in the United States. It's organized all over the United States through the commission. And these are the guys that formed it, and they were all together, Costello and Lucky Luciano, Vito Genovese, and Anastasia was part of that. But he's still loyal to Costello, and he's a scary guy. I mean, do you want to go against Albert Anastasia and kill one of his friends? I don't think so. You better take out Anastasia first and then go kill off his friend. He tried to, Genovese started sowing some seeds of discontent, you know, pointing out how brutal Anastasia had been, trying to get other people who supported Anastasia to... He portrayed him as an unstable killer who was bringing down too much law enforcement pressure on the La Cosa Nostra, which is probably true. I mean, you know, all these murders, that the more murders you pile up, the more government attention you're going to get. Genovese had also found out that Anastasia had been, get this, Aaron, selling memberships to his crime family for $50,000 without asking anybody in the commission. He would make you. You'd become a make man and made man in the Anastasia family. All you had to do is pay him $50,000.
And he wasn't passing any of that up.
And
to
he wasn't
the...
passing any of that up either. But he wasn't supposed to do that anyhow. It kind of takes away from the specialness of it if you're just out selling your memberships. Joseph Valachi had reported on a lot of this. He also reported that Anastasia during this time was losing large amounts of money betting on horse races. And he was surly and unpredictable, which everybody on the street knew that by then. You know, as Genovese kind of waged this little war of rumor and innuendo over the next few years, he did get the support of an Anastasia capo, or a underboss, a boss of one of his crews, a captain of one of his crews named Carlo Gambino, who will eventually get the Carlo Gambino family.
People might know the Gambino name.
Right. And he offered him leadership of Anastasia's family in return for his cooperation. Genovese also got tacit approval from Mayor Lansky to move on.
Well, Mayor Lansky was not actually a boss, was he? He was more of an underboss?
Mayor Lansky is a whole story in himself. We probably ought to
have... That's a whole other story.
He is, there's a legal term for that, sui generis. He's like one of a kind. He was so important to the ability to make money, and especially in the gambling industry, it was worth millions and millions and millions of dollars to these guys. Prohibition was gone. Mayor Lansky had organized all these different gambling joints all over the United States and down into Cuba at this point in time. And it created so much cash money, in which now the cash money comes a lot of political power. You know, you don't write checks to your city councilman or to your judge to do what you want. You take them paper bags full of cash, and so he was creating so much cash money that he was always a powerhouse. His whole life. He handled all of Luciano's business interests in the United States, but he was also close to Vito Genovese. He was close to all of them. So Genovese could not kill Albert Anastasia or Frank Costello without Lansky's support. According to Valachi, Anastasia's greed... And part of this greed was selling these memberships of his crime family for $50,000. It drove Mayor Lansky to give Vito Genovese the approval to take these guys out, to take out Anastasia, and to take out Frank Costello and consolidate power underneath him. Anastasia had been demanding a larger and larger share of the gambling that I just talked about, all the gambling proceeds out of Cuba, and Lansky had refused. Anastasia had tried to start his own casino rackets in Cuba.
Well, Lansky refused, but Lansky still knew who Anastasia was in terms of he was a pretty cold-blooded killer.
Oh, yeah, he knew exactly who he was. He was never going to move on him on his own, and... But when Anastasia started competing in the casino business in Cuba with Lansky and really the rest of the mob, because he was sharing the proceeds, all the gambling proceeds out of Cuba, he was sharing it with the other five families in New York City. Anastasia was just trying to get it all for himself. Up to this point in time, Lansky had just stayed on the sidelines. This is what... through Lansky's support to Genovese. Now they're pretty much all the real powers are lined up.
Well, because Anastasia?
Anastasia.
Anastasia is essentially insulting the families that are part of the crime syndicate by not basically wetting their beak, by not tithing to them 10 or 20%.
So he's moving in
on their territory.
He's moving in on a piece of action that they've got going that they're all sharing in, and he's moving in on it, starting his own. And he's going to keep that for himself. 1955, Anastasia pleads guilty to income tax evasion for underreporting his income during the 40s. He gets a year in prison and a $20,000 fine.
Doesn't seem like much, does it? Like they're just going after him for small things when you consider that he's a
stone killer and killed all these people and he had to Murder Incorporated, but you do what you can. You know, you got to chip away and keep chipping away in law enforcement on these guys.
So when he was in prison for a year, he was still running the family.
Oh, yeah, that was nothing. I did try to deport him during this time, but they couldn't get it done. By 1957, Genovese has decided to move on Costello. He has Carlo Gambino, Anastasia's underboss, lined up to support him when things go wrong and get bad. He has Meyer Lansky on his side. He probably has quite a few other mobsters. I would imagine Anastasia, they probably all would be glad when Anastasia is gone. He hires a man, Genovese hires a guy named Vincent Gigante, who shoots, but he does not kill Costello. It was just a superficial wound, but it did persuade him. Frank Costello said, okay, that's enough. And he just relinquished all power to Genovese, and he retired. So Genovese now controls what was originally the Lucky Luciano crime family, who was originally the boss of bosses, and now calls it the Genovese crime family. Joseph Bonanno credits himself with arranging a sit-down where he convinced Albert Anastasia from immediately going to war with Genovese in response. Because they all know these gang wars, they draw all kinds of heat and attention.
Well, and he owed his allegiance to Frank Costello.
Yeah, he did. But they've convinced him just to back off, not do anything. Well, later on that year, in June 1957, Frank Scalise, who's Anastasia's underboss, and he's the one that's been selling memberships in the Anastasia family, he's assassinated. According to Joseph Valachi, Anastasia himself approved the hit, and then also a subsequent murder of Scalise's brother, Joseph, because even though he offered to forgive his threats to avenge his brother Frank, he didn't do it. He went ahead and hit the brother. It's pretty common. I mean, we had the same thing in Kansas City where the Spiro brothers, once they took one out, they ended up having to take all four out. By the end, they took out all four.
Because they're not going to stop until they get there.
They won't stop. No, nobody's safe until all the brothers are gone.
And this wouldn't be the first set of brothers that he had taken out.
No. The morning of October 25th, 1957, Albert Anastasia enters a barbershop in the Park Sheraton Hotel at 870 7th Avenue, which is now the Park Central Hotel in Midtown Manhattan. This is a place he regularly went, and he relaxed to get his haircut and get his shave. Anastasia's driver parked his car in the underground garage and then took a walk, leaving Anastasia unprotected. That's suspicious right there, that he left him, didn't stand
just take
around.
A walk.
Yeah, he didn't stand around the barbershop, because you know things are a little bit tense all the time around this guy. As he relaxes in the barber chair, as Albert Anastasia relaxes in the barber chair, two men with scarves covering their faces run in, shove the barber out of the way, and a volley of bullets takes out Albert Anastasia. He actually was able to rise up and try to come back after him and lunge at him, but they just kept firing. He finally fell on the floor dead, which is a real famous picture. Look on the website. You'll see the picture of Albert Anastasia laying on the barber's floor. Everybody of a certain age remembers this murder.
Well,
tremendous amount of public interest.
And sometime shortly thereafter, his driver came back from his walk.
Yeah.
I mean, that did. They had scarves over their faces. It potentially, if the history of the mob, isn't it frequently the driver who ends up taking out the boss to move up the chain?
Well, it could be. It could be. It was arranged by the Genovese and Carlo Gambino, who had been his underboss at one time, and carried out by a guy named Crazy Joe Gallo of the Albert Profaci family. This was one of the other five families at the time. Crazy Joe Gallo, that's a whole nother story. That's probably a 4 or 5 episode story in itself, which we've got a writer that whose father, who's written a book about his father's life, who was a member of the Gallo, Crazy Joe Gallo family for a while. We'll get him on. But Crazy Joe Gallo, he's the kind of guy that says you could just call the five of us the barbershop quintet in order to brag about his part in the hit. That, I guess he had a little five-man crew that carried out this hit.
Well, that doesn't make sense because they said there was two.
Well, they probably, you know, they had somebody in the car for the getaway. Two that walks in and does a shooting, but you might have five people that were totally involved in it. You know, you have like a spotter and a driver and another kind of a support guy that stands out in front in case the bodyguard comes wandering up, or in case the policemen start walking up and happen to be walking the beat and starting to walk in, they can do something to try to distract them and take them out. Anyhow, he said you call the five of us the barbershop quintet. A guy had a sense of humor, didn't he? That's a big deal to kill Dammer and Anastasia, the head of Murder Incorporated at the time. That makes you bad.
Wasn't there a lot of publicity about this?
Oh, my God. It was huge. Like I said, everybody of a certain age remembers the headlines and remembers this picture. I sure do. Brought down a lot of police heat. There's a lot of different theories on this. A lot of people would say it was illogical for Profaci to kill Anastasia because he was allied with Bonanno and Anastasia on the commission against Genovese and Costello and a guy named Tommy Lucchese, but He may have eliminated an ally, but he gained some other allies. He probably moved over to the other side. There's another theory that the New England boss, Raymond L. Patriarca, was involved with it. And Genovese had traditionally had strong ties with the Patriarca crime family in Boston and Providence, Rhode Island. Genovese had to have things pretty well lined up with the rest of the mob guys to do this and get away with it. It would make sense to use out-of-town hitmen, use the Patriarca family. Now, purportedly, the Patriarca hit team was led by a mobster known as Mad Dog, John Mad Dog Nazarian. You know, nobody will ever know. Nobody's really ever talked. I don't even think Joseph Valachi. This was actually Joseph Valachi was out of the loop by then. He was been in jail and come out and told about the old days about Anastasia, but he didn't know anything about this, and nobody ever came forward to my knowledge and told the real story. There's a drug dealer theory that Carlo Gambino used some Gambino drug dealers from the Lower East Side. Heroin was big down there back in those days in the 50s. Named off some people, Stephen Armone and Stephen Gramuta and Arnold Wittenberg, but I don't know. You know, there's always all kinds of theories.
Well, but who was the most likely person to
Gambino
to gain
Gambino, Carlo Gambino,
because of the death of Anastasia?
He became the new boss. And at the 1957 meeting in Appalachian, New York, you know, he was proclaimed the boss of the Anastasia crime family, and it became the Gambino crime family from then on until modern times.
Now, what about the Anastasia brother?
Oh, that's right. I forgot he had a brother, didn't he? Anthony Anastasia. You know, let me look here. Oh, but darn, I forgot about this. After Carlo Gambino took over, Anastasia's brother, Anthony, they took away any pieces of action he had. He didn't have much left to make money off of. He had to go out and steal for himself. He took away all of his power in the National Crime Syndicate or the La Cosa Nostra Mafia, and he became a snitch to the FBI. Just before he died, he didn't live a whole lot longer. In 1963, he died. Probably a good thing for Gambino. He must not have been near as bad as his brother. He would have probably gone to the mattresses, as they say, and tried to start a real war and take out Carlo Gambino. Because he would have known. He was an underling in the Anastasia family, and here the underboss, Carlo Gambino, becomes boss, and there's a lot of rumors about Gambino used some Lower East Side drug dealers to kill Anastasia. Genovese was the kind of became the boss of bosses and the boss of his own family during this, that had been during this time. And then after the Appalachian meeting, for some reason, Meyer Lansky and Lucky Luciano, Frank Costello, and Carlo Gambino all conspired to bring down Genovese with a narcotic conviction. For some reason, they bribed a drug dealer to testify he had personally worked with Genovese. July 7, 1958, Genovese was indicted on a narcotics trafficking charge. He was sentenced to 15 years in prison, 1959.
But Genovese, a lot of these guys, they would be arrested and they'd be in jail and they would still run their organization.
Depends on, you know, it kind of depends on their length of time in jail, where what they're in jail for and where they go and what their support is. If these other guys, if all the other heads of the families, Lansky, Luciano, Costello, and Gambino, want him put away, then once he gets put away, they're not going to allow him to run any crime family. They'll just move in on the crime family and say, okay, your new boss is this and this, and here's what you do. I'm not going to go that far into it. We're probably getting down to how much time we got here, Aaron. What are we at?
No, we got about 5 minutes.
Okay, that's what I thought. So that's kind of where we are. Anastasia's dead. Carlo Gambino is taking over his crime family. Vito Genovese is out. That's the story of the five families during the 1950s as they rose to power and then had, you know, really the Godfather kind of shows some of this. These, you know, going to the mattress and people, you know, having little conspiracies to move in on other families. Some people, the Godfather in that, Marlon Brando played the Godfather. He didn't really want to have this war and he wanted to just back off, and his son wanted the war. He did not want to allow anybody to move in on their territory, and you know they kill his son. So then Michael Corleone and the fictional mobster moves on up, and he's got to go on a vendetta
to avenge his brother.
Avenge his brother. And they go to the mattresses, and then they kill Luca Brasca, one of the, you know, main underbosses, one they're most afraid of. You know, Luca Brasca sleeps with the fishes and send a message like that. All that's ripped from all this stuff right here that happened here. That's all ripped from this.
I think it's interesting here that Anastasia's business card claiming he was a sales representative for the Convertible Mattress Corporation in Brooklyn. Maybe that's what where they came up and coined the moniker.
Go to the mattresses?
Yeah.
Might be. I don't think I coined the moniker going to the mattresses. I think it was from the fact that they had even had a Sopranos segment on this where they go in this mob war between the Sopranos and I can't remember the other family over in Manhattan. So they rent apartments and houses and they don't have furniture in them. So they just bring mattresses in to sleep on.
It's like their safe house.
And you have a little safe house. Nobody knows that they're there. And then you bring in the little fat mobster to cook up a great big plate of spaghetti and sauce, and you eat spaghetti and sauce and talk about how you're going to go kill these other guys as soon as you can. Of course, if you think about it, how they're going to, when everybody goes to mattresses, you run around, how are you going to find each other until somebody comes out of hiding and starts going to their old places again? They got to go back to their old joints.
Go to their old ways.
Or their old ways.
Their old friends.
Right. So if everybody goes to the mattresses, it's kind of hard to really get anything done. You know, kind of interesting about Anastasia. We had a little bit of a controversy when Nick Civella died. Would a priest come to give him last rites and conduct his funeral? And they did find one. There was a little bit of a controversy within the church, but a priest did come and gave him his last rites and officiated at his funeral, and his funeral was in the Sacred Heart Catholic Church down in Little Italy, and he was buried in approved kind of a church burial cemetery. Now, Anastasia was so bad, they had to have his funeral at a Brooklyn funeral home because the Roman Catholic Diocese of Brooklyn had refused to sanction a church burial. And so he's buried in a Greenwood Cemetery in Greenwood Heights, Brooklyn, and only a handful of people and relatives, friends and relatives showed up for Anastasia's funeral. He had burned most of his bridges, and he was such a bad actor that even the Catholic Church wouldn't allow him in. Well, I think we're done with this story, Aaron.
I mean, you'd think after coming up as he did in a, you know, in a violent manner, why is it any surprise that he goes down equally as violent?
Absolutely no surprise
at
all.
And then, of course, no witnesses come forward to testify that who the killers were.
No.
Of the man who would, snuff out or make the witnesses for his own actions disappear.
He was not well loved.
Kind of curious who his driver's name was.
Yeah,
that'd be some research to figure out.
Because
so often,
it's
kind of like Nick Civella was a driver for the Charlies.
Well, actually, he was a driver for Anthony Gizzo.
Okay.
And Gizzo became the boss right after the two Charlies got killed. So it's not always a driver that takes them out, but it's somebody who is just under them, then becomes the boss. And sometimes it's a driver who then, when Gizzo died of natural causes.
Johnny Lazy's driver became the head of the Kansas City local.
He became Charles Carollo became the head for a while. He just didn't last very long. The government took him out and deported him. And that's when Bonaggio and Gargatta moved up after Lazy's driver.
After
left.
Carollo.
Right. But I think that was not somebody trying to move up. I think that was some kind of this Joe Lesko, more than likely, who Lazio had started an argument with because Lesko and some of his gamblers were not giving any money to the clique or Lazio's clique. I think that's probably the logical story there.
It's an interesting story at large of Albert Anastasia and the kind of the creation of Murder, Inc. and the development of the organized crime family, or was it the syndicate?
The National Crime Syndicate was created, which brought in Jewish mobsters, maybe some other ethnic group mobsters, but primarily Jewish mobsters, and they operated together. And that's where Meyer Lansky came from, and this Louis Lepke Bullcalter, and I'm trying to think who else. There's others. And then out of that, they formed the commission, but that was just for Italians only. And the commission, they all worked together with other cities. That's when it first got organized from city to city. If you think about it.
On a national level.
On a national level. That's also when telephones were developed. That's also when transportation became where you could get on a train or get in a car and make it to another major city in a few hours. So that's when they started organizing on a national basis, and this was the framework that did it. And it really started with the killing of the old Mustache Pete's by Lucky Luciano. He was the one that had the foresight to form this national criminal syndicate. And then they'd all work together. And they even went international when they went down to Cuba, sent Meyer Lansky down to Cuba and organized, connected up with the Cuban government where they could pay people off down there and started all those casinos because there was no legitimate gambling in the United States anywhere at that time.
But in Cuba, it was allowed, and so then they came in as experienced operators.
Right, just like in Las Vegas, just like our friend Bill Friedman said in Las Vegas. The mob's guys that have been running the illegal gambling for all these years, when you start a legal gambling place, they're the ones that you want to bring in because they know how to run a gambling joint. They know how the odds. They know how to not lose too much money. They know how to get along with the gamblers and keep them coming back.
The only other thing that came to my mind was simply that, Meyer Lansky's grandson is on Twitter.
He is. Meyer Lansky's grandson's on Twitter. Somebody was going to do an interview with some member of that family, and I never did hear anything back from it.
Meyer Lansky's grandson follows the Big Dumb Fun Show now.
Well, good.
Or maybe it's just me. I'm not sure. I have to go back and look and see which one.
I hope he doesn't have a hit out on
I think
you.
It might be on me. And
you keep talking about putting a hit on our donate button.
On our donate button. I'd be fine if Meyer Lansky's grandson wanted to do that.
What if he put a hit out on Aaron Gnerk and the Big Dumb Fun Show?
Well, who gets the money?
Who would pay to have that done?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I could think of a few people. Well, they might not have a lot of money.
Probably about 15 cents, maybe. All right, I think we've done it, Aaron, don't you?
Well, we didn't mention your favorite nonprofit
yet.
Well,
we need to do that, don't we? Folks, if you have a loved one or an employee that has a problem with drugs or alcohol, make your first call to First Call. Call 816-361-5900 or go to their website, www.firstcallkc.org. I think I've done everything I can do, Aaron. What about you?
Well, remember to download the Kansas City Mob Tour app. You can take your own personal tour of notorious mob locations throughout Kansas City, or you can actually charter a mob tour as narrated by Gary Jenkins. Now, it costs a little bit of money.
That reminds me, Aaron, I just got an email from one of our fans who is actually in Florida, but he's going to be in Kansas City over Thanksgiving, and he wants to do a mob tour. So we've got that lined up. We just need to work out the details.
If you'd like a mob tour, send an email to ganglandwire@gmail.com. And I don't know, and Gary will respond to that, not me.
And I'll respond to that. Yes, I will. We'll work something out. I've got a program coming up for the PEO, a little short 10-minute, 15-minute talk. They like to have educational programs, and they thought learning about the mafia in Kansas City would be educational. I think that's been about 2 weeks. I've got that one coming up. I don't do any other programs until that I have lined up right now until Mob Month, January in
Las Vegas
at the Clark County Library.
If you enjoy what you hear, give us a comment, share, subscribe to the iTunes, and download the Kansas City Mob Tour app. Check out the documentary that started it all, Gangland Wire. It's available on Amazon to buy or as a rental.
Right, and give us a review on iTunes. I think we did it, Aaron. Say goodnight, Aaron.
Goodnight, Aaron. Music provided by Odd-O-Matic. Follow them on Facebook at Odd-O-Matic Music.
Folks, if you have waited around and listened to us all the way to the end of this third and final episode of the Murder Incorporated story, we have a little bonus episode for you. Not an episode, just a little short story that I thought I found on a Mafia Interest or a Mob Interest Facebook page, a story about Steven Seagal. You all know who Steven Seagal, the actor, is. He's supposed to be some kind of a martial artist and tough guy, and he's always taking out the bad guys single-handedly. Well, he had a little problem. You know, he also did a reality show where he actually was a police officer. Steven Seagal did this for a while, and then Eric Estrada from Highway Patrol, or what was the name of that show, State Troopers or whatever?
Chips
did it for a while. They actually made them sworn officers, and they went out on patrol. I remember watching one of them, and this guy gets out of the car after he gets stopped on a car check, and he looks up and he says, "Well, you're Steven Seagal, aren't you, man?" And he said, "Yeah, I am. You know, could I see your driver's license?" Anyhow, Steven Seagal, yeah, you know, huge big guy, martial artist and all this. Well, put him in with the mob and see what happens, Aaron. What do you think would happen when Steven Seagal has a little conflict with a crew of alleged mobsters demanding that he make movies with them?
Well, I don't know. Wouldn't he ask how much he's going to make?
Yeah, you'd think he would. You'd think he would buck up to him. You'd think Steven Seagal would would actually do something with mob guys.
I don't know. Would he ask, how did you get my number?
I think he'd probably just kick their ass. That's what I'd think.
That's what he's best at least on film.
Well, he testified about a little meeting with some mob guys, and he claimed that one of them said, well, if you said the wrong thing, we'd have killed you.
Seagal was called as a government witness Tuesday at the racketeering trial of Peter Gotti, brother of the late crime boss John Gotti and other reputed gangsters. Authorities said Seagal, known for his martial arts moves in films like Under Siege, Marked for Death, and Exit Wounds, was a victim of a bid by the Gambino crime family to infiltrate the film industry for profit.
Well, there's that Gambino crime family is still around.
Prosecutors said Seagal, who was 50 at the time, was extorted after a falling out with his former business partner, Julius Nasso, an alleged Gambino associate. Wearing an Asian jacket and blue jeans, the actor testified that he was menaced by defendant Anthony, quote-unquote, Sonny Ciccone. Is that right? Ciccone? Ciccone?
Ciccone, I think, yeah.
Ciccone?
Yeah, this Ciccone dude, he demanded that Steven Seagal pay the Gambino crime family $150,000 for each movie that he made with this Julius Nasso, who was a Gambino associate. You know, anytime you do something with the mob, they want a piece of the action. And so he demanded that Steven Seagal pay him $150,000. Now, what do you think Steven Seagal should do when somebody demands that they pay him some kind of extortion money like that? He should kick their ass. Look, what did he do?
Look at me when I talk to you, Seagal quotes Ciccone as saying during one shakedown, we're proud people. Work with Julius and we'll split the pie. He testified he tried to, quote unquote, buy time by agreeing to reunite with Nasso. Those were people who were not going to let go.
So Steven Seagal, internationally known bad guy, said he just tried to buy time by saying that he would reunite and make movies with Nasso. He said he kind of
whined. In the meantime, he ran to the police.
He runs to the police. He's kind of whined. These were people who were not going to let go. Well, come on, Steven Seagal. Kick their ass.
Prosecutors said wiretaps caught Nasso being instructed to demand money from the actor. In a bugged VIP room at a Brooklyn restaurant in 2001, the suspects could be overheard chuckling over how petrified Seagal looked at a meeting, prosecutors said. The actor told jurors he had a license to carry a handgun and had gone to the meeting armed. In New York, I always carry a gun, Seagal said.
There we are. He's back. He always carries a gun. Of course, he didn't do anything with it, but he said, oh, I'm just trying to buy some time here, and then goes to the police.
Defense attorneys denied any threats were made, saying Nasso was also businesslike in seeking to get Seagal to repay $500,000 he loaned the actor for taxes. That's a tough one. I mean, if he actually loaned Seagal $500,000
yeah,
and he's a known Gambino associate,
here's
Seagal, you know this?
Yeah, here's the deal on that. He probably, he may not have loaned him anything, but what they do is, or maybe they do some business with him and they do something for them. They grease some wheels somewhere when Seagal's making a movie, or they handle some kind of union problem, and then they come to him and they say, okay, you owe us $500,000, and you got to pay it back, and here's how you pay it back. Maybe you didn't even really. It's kind of like Alan Glick when he got the $1 million, or he got the $62 million loan from the Teamsters. Then a couple years later, a year later, Nick Civella sits him down in the hotel room and says, man, he says, we took care of you, now you owe me $1 million. And Glick says, well, I don't know how I can pay that back. Nick says, well, he said, let Lefty do that. And Lefty was, of course, skimming the money off to pay it back. What he was doing was telling him. And he already told him, he said, if it was up to me, I wouldn't let you leave this hotel room alive. And that's what they do. They pretend like you owe them a lot of money, And then they just start threatening you, especially if you're a pussy like Seagal is here.
Wasn't that one where he actually named his children?
Yeah, no, that was enough. That's when they told him to get out of the. They got their money back. They had the skim set up and was coming back. Then later on, Tuffy goes to him and says, "You got to sell this casino." And that's when he named off the children. There was two different instances where they threatened Glick.
In his opening statement last month, defense attorney George George Santangelo called Seagal a pathological liar.
What does Steven Seagal do when somebody calls him a pathological liar? He kicks their ass.
Listen, he's not Chuck Norris.
Come on, man.
That's Chuck Norris's answer to everything. Steven Seagal.
You know, but Chuck Norris, you know, he when he does push-ups, he just pushes the world away from him. Chuck Norris doesn't sleep. He waits.
On Tuesday, Santangelo asked Seagal if he once tried to hire a former CIA operative to kill someone. "This is insane," Seagal shot back before the judge struck the question. "I'm not on trial here." Seagal also testified that he never asked authorities to protect him from the mob. "I'm a movie star," he said. "If you want to keep making movies, you don't want to start a war with these people."
Steven Seagal is getting shook down, and he doesn't want to start a war with these people? I'm shocked. Chuck Norris would never allow that.
In a brief interview outside court Tuesday, Seagal said he was forced by prosecutors to testify. "I don't think I accomplished anything other than to comply with a government order to testify or go to jail," he said. "I didn't want to go to jail. I have 6 kids."
Oh, boy, that's such a disappointment, Steven Seagal. Now he won't even take credit. He won't be a man and said, "You know, I'm testifying. I'm going to put these guys in jail." He's pussying out again. He says, "Well, I'm only testifying because I was forced to. Please don't hurt me. They're making me. I have to go to jail if I testify."
His next films will include Under Indictment.
No, he'll be ratting people out. You know, I don't mind. I would never denigrate somebody for ratting them out, but, you know, be a man about it. Just say, "Yeah, this is what I'm doing." They're not forcing me to do anything. You know, you guys are trying to hurt me. I'm going to hurt you back, and this is the best way I know how. It's like our friend Frank Culotta, who we're going to have on the show here pretty soon, and Red Wimette, who will be coming up here pretty soon. Actually, by the time this one's out, Red Wimette will have been on. But those guys had some nuts about it. They just said, "Yeah, this is what I'm doing. I'm ratting you out. I'm testifying against you."
Well, Seagal just tough on the screen.
Yeah, no shit. All right, well, that's your little bonus for sticking around and listening to us blather along about this thing. I think I've got all I need to say out tonight. What about you, Aaron?
Remember, folks, to download the Kansas City Mob Tour app. It's only $1.99. You can take your own personal tour of notorious mob sites in Kansas City.
One more commercial, folks. And don't forget to rent my movie for $1.99 on Amazon. I think you'll enjoy it. And tell your friends about it. And give us a review on iTunes. Please give us a review.
Review and subscribe and give us a review.
Or I'll have Steven Seagal come and kick your ass.
He's not going to kick anybody's ass.
They don't care about that, dude.
Steven's going to come in and say, "Listen, I got 6 kids. That's why I'm giving Gary Jenkins a plug."
All right. Say goodnight, Aaron.
Goodnight, Aaron. Music provided by Odd-O-Matic. Find them on Facebook at Odd-O-Matic Music.